Saul. How many assassination attempts is that now?
4.
17. 17 we're at.
But we got him.
But we got him.
We got him.
Who's Ladies and gentlemen.
Finally got the president.
No.
No, no. We got the guy.
The guy.
Got the perp.
Number 17.
They always get the guy, right? One way or another.
Yeah, it was pretty farcical. I suppose it was this week's entertainment, which was meant to be the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which ordinarily is in the news because usually the president gets a roasting from a comedian.
But yeah, he nixed that this year because there's too much to roast him on.
So yeah.
He had a mentalist instead.
Yeah. Oz Perlman. You know who that is?
Yeah.
I remember him from the Joe Rogan podcast where Rogan didn't like it because the guy guessed quotes his ATM.
PIN code.
Anyhow.
Yeah.
But actually, let's look at that. We'll see this guy. He was in the middle of entertaining Trump when... I mean, this didn't go down in the room at this hotel. You know what? Hotel Hilton, was it in D.C.?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think... Do others say you can hear shots? I don't hear anything. Shots fired. But that's Trump. The event has yet to start, but over his shoulder is this mentalist, Oz Perlman.
Perlman.
And he's showing him a trick or something.
And if you want Jewish conspiracy theories, then right there, this was all orchestrated. is this a video? Yeah, that's a video of it. Go ahead.
It might be a bit. Yeah.
He's like, in the sea, the word you said was, that I couldn't have known, was that word, right? Do you remember your word? Well, here is the word I wrote down last year. And then right as he does that, there's noises from the back of the room, which is a super big room. Like it's like 2,500 people in it. The cantina band stops, Slice Noodles, and comes to a halt.
The big guns.
And not much going on. People just heard some shots, and that was enough to freak people out. Which I suppose is okay. But it's, you know, you're talking about like a big room. They were looking to the back of that room. Doors probably closed. And then out from there into the lobby of the actual hotel. I think this is underground as well. So they're very far from the whole scene of the actual shooting, which was out closer to the front of the building. But it was enough to obviously make everybody freak out. So you can hardly call it an assassination attempt. There's the video of the guy. There's a CCTV video of him, you know, running past the metal detector
and the cops,
whatever. There. This is it. Here's a short one.
That is terrible.
That's in there running past. Definitely maybe a couple of shots fired off there by those two guys in the background, but very quickly they're going to the ground there and putting his gun away. So the guy has, within that 15 seconds, the guy's run through there. Either some of the police, a couple of the police maybe fired a few shots at him. There's 5 shots in total. Maybe the guy fired off 1 or 2 or whatever, but very little time to do anything really. And right at the end there, you see them basically, he's already been taken down. Not shot, but actually, you know, tackled to the ground and just handcuffed, and he doesn't put up any resistance, and that's the end of it.
Yeah.
It's hardly like...
I've seen a description that he emerged from like a locker or a side room.
He's a resident in the hotel, so...
Yes, he was staying there. So he was there under his own name, but hiding out. And the description of his weapon, well, 2 knives, 2 firearms, one of which is a... a shotgun he put together himself or something like that.
Assembled outside or whatever. But yeah, it's not, this is like something that literally, obviously it's very amateur. It's not, it didn't, no, nobody including the perp was actually even grazed. Well, I think one, there's the story is that one,
I think he was taking
policeman,
it was.
One policeman was, was had a, got hit by a bullet into on his vest, but he's fine. So
he may even
that could have been friendly fire.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I'm surprised he's alive though, because you know when they're all like all those different agencies and they all draw their weapons.
Yeah, but one of them tackled him though.
Okay.
One of them tackled the guy to the ground, which again suggests that he hadn't run off, taken up position, and has opened fire on all these cops. Like, there's no way somebody would get close to him if he was doing that. The tackle to the ground. So the whole thing is very, basically very just amateurish. Some dude ran in and didn't do very much and didn't get shot, didn't get hurt in any way. One cop took one bullet to the vest and that was it.
Yeah.
So in the story wasn't can't put it down as an assassination attempt, no. Cause didn't even
no.
Trump barely knew that anything was happening, so
yeah. It saved, well, he wasn't going to get a roasting because like we said, he was gonna have some other entertainment that night. I wonder, was that because he's too sensitive at the
moment? Of course, yeah. That's why there's always been a comedian there, but he decided to nix it and have this mentalist guy there instead as the entertainment because he didn't want to be roasted, right?
Yeah.
Because he's a bit sensitive. But not in the mood for it.
For what it's worth, he's been named the gunman, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
Cole Allen from California, a teacher by trade, allegedly posted an Instagram photo of himself wearing an IDF sweatshirt that's going around. It was posted apparently the day of. That seems too good a lead to be true, if you ask me.
Yeah.
So that's be taken with a grain of salt right off the bat. There are a couple of oddities though. The place where he ran, that security checkpoint, then immediately runs into the press scrummage area where they're all set up for the arrivals of the VIPs. And they're all staged there with cameras and everything. Most people have arrived and are seated. So they're presumably also prepped for the red carpet departures when they go.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy, it happened just there. There's no footage of that just yet, but then there's this eyewitness. I don't know who the person talking to Fox News is, but she says who she was talking to. The husband of White House press secretary, is it Catherine Leavitt? She begins telling her story and then she's abruptly cut off. Have a listen.
I want to just quickly tell you, I was sitting next to Caroline Leavitt, the press secretary's husband. He was one of our guests. He was seated right next to me. And, right as the dinner was starting, the national anthem happened. And then he kind of leaned over and said, I watched you on TV. You did a great job. You need to be very safe. And he was just very serious when he said that to me. And he kind of looked around the room and he said, there are some...
That's the silence
on
Fox
News.
Sounds
like we lost Aisha's phone there. And this happens, by the way, especially when you have so many people attempting to utilize the same cell service at the same time.
That's just them filling in the silence, but it's quite a silence.
I was just reading.
Who knows? He could have been saying to her, you in particular, I heard something about you or whatever. In D.C., probably people have eyes and ears on who's in favor and who's not.
Or just being,
but in context, it sounds.
Yeah, I've just been concerned about the security because a lot of other people
said it was lax.
Were saying that for them, anyway, the security was lax. But
for DC, there's footage of the room being cleared. I thought this was funny. So, like, it's a storm in a teacup, but this is. so much America because this is obviously going to be the news cycle for 24 hours.
Yeah, make a big deal about it.
I'm overreading The Guardian, the BBC, and they've got very somber, serious headlines about, oof, this is the most serious, you know, situation yet. And in all my years covering Trump, oof, you know, I'm like, what the hell? It was farcical. It's just... Yeah, they're going up the head table, clearing the president, the VP, and some others.
That's Hegseth's wife. Or no, what do they call him?
Hegseth, you'll see him.
That's Stephen Miller's wife in the pink. He was just ushered away.
There's Hegseth. What are we doing? Dana White's like, whatever, do I have to leave?
Let's go to side, let's not go up the middle. This
is crazy. It's all a bit quiet. And USA, USA.
Oh my
gotta
God.
Gotta get the USA in. USA. USA. S-A-U.
I can't spell.
Fetterman's not moving. He's just whatever.
It's all quiet. Is that Dana White?
Dana White's just
Dana was, he was loving it. He wanted to fight someone.
Well, for Dana, it probably reminded him of UFC Fight Night because he knows theater when he sees it. And she's fixing her hair.
Nobody's concerned. Some people are still eating their dinner. The context, obviously, in this is like the long history of shootings. Mass shootings in America, that has everybody on edge. You know, if this happened in any other country that doesn't have that history, then that would have been like people like
laughed off.
What's that noise? Huh? Don't know. Anyway, carry on. And then afterwards, oh, there was a guy out there. He came in with a gun, fired a few shots. He's arrested. Okay, well, we'll just carry on with this then. Let's go. Mm-hmm. But America's like, oh my God, pray, thoughts and prayers, pray for our heroes. Thank you for your service. Oh my God.
USA, USA.
USA, USA. And it's like, what?
Yeah, it's a sign of the times.
Reality you live in, like, well, yeah, you live in that reality, I suppose. So, meh.
Meh, but you wonder, I mean, the pressures, if he was in any way put up to it, or if it's just one of those things, it's more kind of prodding and pressuring of Trump, maybe.
Maybe, but in a very subtle way, and obviously not in a very well coordinated way. If he was put up to it in some way or whatever, you know, it's just like that was like level one training, which is hey, level one manipulation, you know, or level one Manchurian candidate. All right, like we don't have a lot of time for the hypnosis and stuff, so we're just going to do a few minutes. So you want to get yourself some guns and run into that event and. Do something. All right, done. That one's done. Let's move on.
Yeah.
Because, you know, whatever. We just want to. So, but even if that was the case, but if it wasn't, it's very like, it's also just as plausible that it wasn't.
No.
And that it was just some California dude who was angry about something.
School teacher, California, maybe libtard spectrum.
Yeah.
Never Trumper, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Who just decided that he would do a thing, and he did a thing, and it didn't come to very much.
But he saved Trump the boredom because he know he hates those liberal events in D.C.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm no comedian to roast, I know. Yeah,
but.
Personally, Trump might have been happy to get out of there, but optically, like, as in the optics of the whole situation isn't good. Like he probably would have preferred. Well, they all get dressed up. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
hadn't even started really. You know,
yeah,
they'd had their dinner. Barely,
yeah,
and the proceedings were meant to take place to the point that if they'd have to do it again, so
yeah,
it's not just a dinner, it's the whole speeches and all that nonsense. They'd have to do it again if they're going to do it properly,
because it's such and an important cultural event in the
yeah,
USA.
Well, yeah,
the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Well, it's an opportunity for good press for Trump and to do the normal thing, do the traditional thing, and all that kind of stuff, and have the people around, and you know. Hands across the tables and all that kind of stuff. Everybody's happy sitting together and stuff. And then it gets marred by, you know, by a quote unquote mass shooting.
Hothead.
Mass shooting.
Hothead.
And this is Trump's America. But it's not really Trump's America. It's everybody's America. But wasn't Trump going to be, you know, very strict on crime in D.C.? Didn't he clean up the town?
He had success.
Yeah.
I think statistically.
Didn't he clean up the town?
Yes.
So there's no more, so you have no more carjackings and stuff, or fewer carjackings, let's say. But he forgot to clamp down on the crazy Californian guys who would want to shoot up an event that he was at.
Yeah.
That's why for a random guy with a personal grudge, based on ideology, no doubt, to fly from California, because he's a full-time teacher there, 5 years, mm-hmm. High school, early high school, middle school maybe, with no background in, maybe he has a science background, but no background in anything to do with guns, to hide out in a closet next to the foyer for that night. I mean, that's quite determined, you know?
Well, you got to have a plan, like, you know what I mean?
And the plan is just run past the metal detector and then...
I don't think he actually hid out in a closet, because there's a woman saying that she saw him put a gun together and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
So I don't think it was like, he wasn't like...
I just saw one can't.
Hunkered down in the closet for 24 hours beforehand, you know, staking the place out around. I don't think that was it. But again, there's lack of security and all that kind of stuff, so it wouldn't have been hard to do. But everybody should spare a thought for the real victim in all of this. The real victim, as I'm sure both of you already know, is...
Oh, my God.
This is... Will no one think of Erica Kirk? Go ahead.
I just want to go find James.
Yeah. I just want to go home.
She was the only one crying through that night.
I have PTSD. She's more upset than she was on September 10th.
I think she was very concerned about the merch that wasn't being sold there, because the whole event was interrupted. I think that's why she was actually crying. Very unhappy about the lack of merch sales. TPUSA and Remember Charlie merch. She had it all. That's all out there.
Well, if
no sales,
the event's re-happening, she'll be fine.
Yeah, but she had set her hopes on it being tonight. So then
she can have a T-shirt for the next one. I survived.
Yeah,
I survived the correspondence dinner.
Yeah,
the 2026.
TPUSA Inc.
And Trump is using it basically to
go on.
To promote the ballroom.
Yes, there he is in his tux afterwards.
Never. Let a good opportunity, good crisis go to waste, right? So,
and the whole chorus on X of MAGA hats.
Mm-hmm.
This is why we need a ballroom at the White House.
Yeah.
All on the same message.
Yeah. So that's what it was for. It was staged by Trump in order to overturn. Apparently there's some woman who's taken a court case to try and stop the ballroom being made.
Because the White House is a listed historical building or something on those grounds.
I don't even know, is it?
It's a bit freaking late for that.
Huh? Bit late?
It's a bit late for that.
What is?
To try stopping the ballroom from getting built, because one area has already been bulldozed.
But that's the best time to do it.
Then you leave a scar and it's Trump's doing.
Yeah, it all goes to waste, you know what I mean? If it's malicious, you know? It's the lawsuit. Plaintiff is the National Trust for Historic Preservation. It's filed in December. The project violates federal law because it lacked congressional authorization, proper reviews with the National Capital Planning Commission, and environmental assessments. So it's an ongoing case. So maybe it's just trying to get some leverage to force the court's hand ballroom to go ahead, because see what happens if we don't have a ballroom.
It's not safe out there down the road here in DC.
It sounds ridiculous, you know, I wouldn't put it past
DC politics.
If you want to come up with a narrative as to why this was a staged event in order to justify fill in the blank, then at this point I wouldn't have a problem with filling in the blank of justify ballroom expansion. Because whatever.
Because the Dems play dirty, so
yeah,
we can do just as dirty.
Yeah.
It's all farcical.
It is a bit.
A
lot of people are going there already. Like, I mean, already right off the bat, people are like stage.
Yeah.
People are like everything stage. People are.
I think it's just
happy to go there these days.
Yeah, it's a different, such a different tone to July 2024.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you had genuine sympathy. Now it's like, meh.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, it looked like it was going to be round two of talks in Pakistan this week. The Iranian foreign minister showed up and he said he had great fruitful discussions, not with any Americans though, with the Pakistani mediators. So, Trump told Witkoff and Kushner last minute, you're not going.
To waste an 18-hour flight to have no discussions with anybody. So, yeah. Duh.
And instead, Truth Social, at least this wasn't too long, but we've seen a variant of this one before as well over the last 6 weeks. The one where you make it look like they're not serious, but call me whenever you have a change of mind. I just canceled the trip of my representatives going is Islamabad, Pakistan, to meet with the Iranians. Too much time wasted on traveling, too much work. Besides which, there is tremendous infighting and confusion within their quote-unquote leadership. Nobody knows who is in charge, including them. Also, FYI, we have all the cards. They have none. If they want to talk, all they have to do is call. That's like pretty much a pure projection of what's going on in the American camp.
Yep.
Most likely.
Yeah.
If anyone needs to decipher that. So just imagine that's Araghchi tweeting and signed Iranian FM Araghchi. And that's where we're at with the diplomacy. Meanwhile, on the ground, a third U.S. aircraft carrier is in the Arabian Sea.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, three have been in play before, but one was in the Med. Now all three are in the Arabian Sea.
Mm-hmm.
First time since spring of 2003. That was obviously the Iraq War. Are we gearing up for another go here?
I don't see what option they have. Because it's kind of stalemate on the blockade of the blockade of the blockade of the reverse blockade.
What's your read on it? Is there, obviously there's bluff and bluster from the US side, but is there any meat to it? I saw a couple of individual reports of so a week ago now, the US fired at an Iranian tanker, the Tuska, and
boarded a couple others.
Yes, you're right. Yesterday, boarded one. Okay, and then yesterday, the MV Sevan, which is an actual oil tanker, they reported as being intercepted in the Arabian Sea and turned back to Iran. So no boarding this time. So is it farcical? On the other hand, many Iranian ships are coming in and out.
Some are getting through, and also, I mean the advantage, since Iran started first, you know, it doesn't seem like any ships are willing to go through. The American ships aren't there to protect or to facilitate the movement of international ships, whatever, international shipping tankers into the Persian Gulf in order to pick up Saudi oil and all that kind of stuff. They're there to stop Iranian ships from either going in or primarily coming out, or ships with Iranian oil from coming out, but they can't interdict them all. So they're only, you know, let's say maybe half so far, but that, you know, that's probably variable because they just don't have the manpower and the number of ships to stop them all. And the Iranians, you know, have that ability. They're holding all the cards, not all the cards, but they're holding more of the cards. They have a better hand basically in that respect, because before Trump announced his blockade of their blockade,
Theirs is more powerful. It's more significant.
The ship, yeah, ships had already more or less tacitly agreed to not attempt to go in unless they were given explicit permission by the Iranians. So that's still the case because the Americans aren't helping to facilitate those ships in at all. So the only thing that the Trump administration or Trump, whoever, can do in that situation is to try and kind of economically strangle to whatever extent they can, Iranian revenue from oil shipping, you know, from oil coming in, getting Iranian oil and shipping them to China or wherever. But they can't do them all. So, you know, it's basically Iran has the initiative in that respect. And, you know, if it settles into a situation where Iran can handle that kind of situation, or they can, you know, they can work out how to sneak more ships past the US blockade to the point where they can take the losses. It's sustainable over, let's say, a longer period of time. Or there's also a pipeline going from Iran to China, going out west, eastwards out of Iran to China.
I didn't know that a functional oil pipeline all the way.
Yeah. So they can, it's obviously be limited, and that pipeline would be, that's why they don't use pipelines, you know, use tankers, because pipelines can be blown up, whereas tankers, not so easily. That's not something necessarily to rely on, but that would be an attack on China as well, you know what I mean? So there's political reasons why you might not want to destroy that pipeline. So, you know, Trump isn't getting what he wants out of this, and sometime in May he's meant to be going to Xi, so he has to keep an eye on that. If he's going to continue to if he's going to still go there, he has to keep an eye on the diplomatic aspect of that. He doesn't want to be being too aggressive, you know, directly or indirectly against Chinese interests.
Well, there was a headline this week about sanctioning Chinese banks.
Yeah, they said that. Yeah, but here we go. Like secondary sanctions on Chinese banks who are taking money from Iranian oil sales. It's not. They're just not in a good position. They were never in a good position anyway. Starting this whole thing off, it was never a sensible proposition, you know, to even start of it, you know, to even start, you know, kick it off. So, and that's what happens. You get stuck in a kind of quagmire in a sense, or in a no-win situation, or where you have to escalate in order to do something about it. But how far are you willing to escalate, and what are the repercussions of that? It's all just not very good. Like,
no.
Despite what Trump says, none of it's very good, you know. So, the only thing they have left really is to have another round of bombing to try and, I don't know, bomb their infrastructure or whatever. But then, you know, he backed off on doing that, right? So there's obviously a reason why he backed off on bombing the infrastructure, like he came bombing them back to the Stone Age. So is he willing to do that? Maybe, because he's a bit desperate, doesn't like to lose, wants the Nobel Peace Prize, that kind of thing. So,
which naturally follows from bombing around the Stone Age.
Of course. Save the world from Iran. So, for Israel. So, yeah, I don't see any other option. They only have one other option, but they have to figure out. They'll probably come up with some genius plan from someone, Hegseth, or someone, one of the generals, or someone who's on site, basically to come up with a genius idea about, look, if we bomb this or that or the other, then we can win. Because, you know, they need a win out of this, like one way or another, you know, they need a bit of a spin it as a win, and it's very difficult, so.
And a win now would have to be, essentially, it's recovering, removing that chokehold on the Strait of Hormuz. That's simply it. A win now, for example, if Iran were to be, I don't know, unbelievably magnanimous towards the US and go, okay, straits open, no tolls, let's talk, that would be enough of a win.
A lot of people would disagree with that as a win, obviously, just getting what?
Getting a draw.
Getting it back to what it was beforehand.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, yeah, that's getting nothing, ultimately, from your war. There's no tangible benefit to. In fact, you've emboldened Iran, you've strengthened Iran. Iran was able to stand its ground. It's all bad all the way around. It looks, the optics on it just, and the reality on it is it's bad for you all the way around. You've you haven't achieved anything. You've actually achieved the opposite, more or less, of what you tried to achieve, which was to weaken Iran. You've actually strengthened Iran, regardless, despite what he claims. And of course, he will claim that over and over again. Mm-hmm. So that's the only way he's going to get a win, is by losing and claiming that he won, which he's been doing.
That's what he is doing. That's probably what he will continue to do.
Yeah. But another round of bombing, like, obviously would be, you know, could be, would just make the whole situation worse. You know, Israel would get smacked again. You know, the Iranians have threatened, you know, if there's an attack on Iranian infrastructure, like, that seems to be the next escalation step for the US, would be to follow through on his bombing Iran back to the Stone Age, destroy their civilization. So if he goes to that extent, then Iran will respond by destroying, like they've threatened to do. They've said that if the Americans take that step, then they're going to respond against the Gulf States infrastructure, oil and gas.
In a way that the rest of them will also be going back to the Stone Age.
Yeah, exactly.
And so then...
And how many of the rest of us?
They'll all be going back to Europe.
Will we all
be... Basically, along with the Israelis. That's where they'll all go back to. But the rest of us will all go back to the Stone Age, because there'll be no more... There'll be serious oil and gas shortages and...
Everything else.
Supply chain stuff. Issues, so...
There's always solar.
There's always solar, yes.
Like in Spain. That didn't work out too well last year. I've seen people crunching numbers on what's missing in the current, just in oil alone, in the current global supply chain. Hmm. Ah, it's crazy. Something like 1,600. Was it 1,600,000? I can't remember that. It was a huge figure. And percentage-wise, it's what you've heard before, about 20%. Mm-hmm. But the hope and prayer, and the reason why the market hasn't gone, you know, completely mental about it yet, is that any day now, it's kind of like full faith in Trump getting a fix, mm-hmm. time pressure. We'll be back. Ah, okay, we're back. And there's a glut. There's a gap. And it can be absorbed, papered over. Pain, yes, but, you know, spread out, and we can all handle a bit of it. Mm-hmm. But we have, if this goes into round two, we have the gap basically never being, because if they blow up the actual things, you can't fill the gap. It doesn't get rebooted. That's mm-hmm. it. You're dealing with a complete downsizing of everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's you know, it seems to be that there's maybe a 3 month or something like that from the, obviously it's delayed, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, it wasn't all at once. It wasn't like 20% of the oil stopped all at once from one day to the next. You know, there was like this much, then add a bit more. Yeah. And in between that, there's some still flowing, and people are maybe filling up their reserves and all that kind of stuff, blah, blah, blah. So it's very difficult to say exactly when the actual real world effects are, you know, actual effects would start to take hold. And they, if and when they do, it would be in specific countries based on their particular profile of their resources and their storage and their access to oil and all that kind of stuff. So,
and their access to alternatives.
Yeah, exactly. So it's going to, you know, we can't predict when or where it's going to happen, if it happens, but it'll be spottily here and there, increasing in different countries. And, you know, it's all interconnected in a certain sense, you know, and it's a very complex system.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess a lot of people are riding on the faith that, which is well-founded, that when shit happens, a complex system in a globalized, interconnected world, it can make up for. Mm-hmm. Things get shifted around, and most people out there don't notice any change, you know? They really only notice COVID because part of the supply chain issues directly affected their freedom of movement mm-hmm. for temporary periods over the course of 18 months, but otherwise they would not really have noticed.
Right.
Except maybe the poorest, obviously, hunger increased in Africa and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. but for most of the golden billion, some of them even remember it fondly. And maybe they're thinking this is just another version, you know.
Yeah.
We'll see. That's to come. As we said, I knew it was going to happen because this has happened twice before, whenever the US and Iran have exchanged fire over smaller exchanges. About 6 weeks later, some truth trickles out. So it was published on NBC, this report about the extent of damage to U.S. bases in the Gulf countries. I can't show you because it's behind the strictest ass paywall you've ever seen. I had to get it from this guy, American Nets on X. He's a pretty good account. He's following this closely. He's paying for NBC's articles. And if we click on, take the first one, we'll see what NBC is now saying about 6 weeks after the biggest Iranian counterattacks against U.S. bases. So anonymous sources, but still reported to NBC that the headquarters building for the U.S. Navy in Bahrain, the nerve center for the Navy's operations in the region, sustained serious damage. They said other parts of the base in Bahrain also suffer significant damage that is likely repairable. Well, let's put an asterisk next to that. That's assuming the U.S. is going back to Bahrain. Anyway, multiple hangars and warehouses at the Ali Al Salam Air Base in Kuwait were also struck. According to the American Enterprise Institute's unofficial assessment that was reviewed by the NBC News. So that's interesting that they might have two sources. The AEI is a total neocon outfit. So we should try to find that if we can. Well, it says unofficial assessment. Right, maybe that's not published. Anyway, their assessment also shows a munitions storage facility at a base in Erbil. We all saw the footage of that, Erbil getting hit repeatedly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But still, it's now at least somewhere in the MSM. This base was damaged, and a runway at the sprawling Al Udeid Air Base in Qatar was destroyed. So that's not like, damn it, they say destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
U.S. bases had been cleared of U.S. troops and other personnel, so many of the bases were left essentially empty and vulnerable to attack by Iranian missiles and drones. Oh, so is that why that's how they managed to do it? We left. Many of the troops who were temporarily relocated are expected to return to the bases once tensions in the region subside. They're such liberals. Like, they think, again, the normalcy bias is like, well, this will end and we'll go back. I don't think you're going back, guys. Okay, let's look at the next screenshot. According to the AEI's assessment, Iran hit more than 100 targets across 11 bases in 7 Gulf countries. Again, this is not news to those of us who are following this on social media, but it's news in official media. Those attacks fell on U.S. and host nation bases in all the GCC countries. The potential future cost to rebuild American military infrastructures overseas may include repair, reconstruction, outright replacement, or even abandonment, decommissioning of locales. Again, that's an upbeat assessment because it's all assuming you're going back.
Mm-hmm.
This senior fellow at AEI, Mackenzie Eaglin, has a cost estimate for repairing the infrastructure at more than $5 billion. But that amount does not account for some of the radar systems, weapon systems, aircraft, and other equipment destroyed in the Iranian strikes.
Mm.
The Iranians damaged at least 2 air defense systems in the region. Blah, blah. We know they did probably more than that, but they're willing to admit to. So the next one, okay, it has a list with a brief description of the bases and the damage done. And finally, this one has an interesting detail in it. The last one. Was that all of them? Was that all 4? I thought maybe go back out and he might have posted another screenshot of text further down. Keep going. No. Yeah, this is the conversation that took place in his thread following it, because what the NBC report included was a detail that one of the bases had been hit with an Iranian F-5. So an Iranian pilot flew and dropped a bomb, successfully hit. And so the reason that was of interest to these history nerds and analysts was this has not happened since the Korean War, where an enemy fighter plane has gotten through and dropped a bomb with an F-5. So F-5, like, they were made in the 60s. Mm-hmm. The Iranians, I'm sure they've upgraded them to some extent, but...
Was that the...
So a little bit of truth creeping out 6 weeks later.
Was that report from the fixed-wing aircraft that struck in Kuwait the same one that was, like, very early on? It was very early on, and there was, like, a fighter pilot who had gone on essentially a, like, suicide mission in a fixed-wing... ancient aircraft and struck Kuwait.
Don't know. Are you confusing the incident where there's video footage of three?
No. F-15s? No. This was an Iranian who.
That's the one you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like an actual acknowledgement of what everybody else had already. What you were saying before. Right. It's like it's just acknowledging what we already knew to have happened back in the. But it was completely denied.
The Iranians claimed
we've destroyed their air force. But if you read that NBC included, well, a current Pentagon estimates say about 2/3 of their air force remains. Trump has tweeted in all fucking caps 100 times, we've destroyed their air force.
They have nothing.
Yeah.
Well, that begs the question, what are US casualties?
Yeah.
They made sure to include, well, all the bases were vacant. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, were they? Completely vacant.
Well, there was that firefight where those two C-130s were you know, disabled in one way or other. Mm-hmm. And then supposedly the Americans, they claim, anyway, they blew them up. And a bunch of little bird helicopters and stuff. So
no one died and everyone got out.
And the Iranians, though, did have a... The Iranians put out their one of their... Wasn't a Lego... movie, I think it was more of an actual a short movie about what they claim happened, and basically they just started. They knew where the Americans were landing, and that had landed on that strip, on that agricultural strip, and they basically started opening fire on them at a specific time, and you know, they all had to get the frick out of there, basically. But you know, it's highly likely in that kind of situation that there would be some American injuries, you know, some American casualties. But, of course, they would be covered up, like everything else covered up, because, again, America is very sensitive about its reputation.
When I remember seeing what you were talking about, maybe it was in that where they were saying that they were aware when the Americans first landed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It wasn't like it was something that happened that they didn't know about. They knew that the Americans had landed and were letting a bit more come in before they started attacking, so that way they could... make the hurt harder.
Yeah, yeah. And what they were actually doing, I mean, the official narrative is that they were going after the enriched uranium.
No, not
the official narrative. The official alternative narrative. The official narrative about a rescue mission is obviously bullshit, because you don't send everybody dismissed that right from the get go. Like, you don't,
because they still haven't.
We don't send in, you don't send in 300 soldiers, 300 troops, multiple planes and aircraft to extract secretly and quietly extract one airman that they've lost. That was complete nonsense right from the get-go, and everybody said it. Everybody,
except the MAGAs.
People who know and people who don't know. Well, I mean, MAGAs.
They were American. Like, just what, USA, Europeans. I was fighting with guys online. Europeans don't understand. We leave no man behind.
Yeah, of course, that's the yay jingoism, rah, 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 USA, USA kind of stuff that is fed people. But I'm not talking about illiterate brain dead people. Right, just for the reference, I'm not talking about those kind of people. I'm talking about people who can actually think a little bit. Immediately from the get-go, realized that that was a bullshit narrative, that it was a rescue attempt, when they saw the official figures of how many troops were sent in. It's like saying, you know, I went to the store today in two C-130s. I do my weekly shopping in two C-130s, and five Abrams battle tanks, and six Apache helicopters. What we do? I just get my shopping.
Yeah,
that's literally the way it sounded like to people who had any sense. So But then, so the alternative, when people try to piece together as to, you know, what they're actually doing, they came up with the idea of that they were trying to get uranium, the nuclear dust.
But it carried a big assumption. Well, that everyone knew where it was.
Exactly. Yeah. Everyone knew where it was and it was accessible. And Trump has been repeatedly saying, you know, of course, you have to parse out some things Trump says or doesn't say. To try and figure out, you know, to get an idea of what's true and what's not. Because it's not that he doesn't always lie. He very often he says stuff that actually can reveal a bit of truth about what's going on. So he has said repeatedly that it's buried. It's very hard to get to. They can't even get to it. That I'd question. But that his latest thing, his unilateral peace agreement that he didn't talk to the Iranians about at all, was that they were going to get it together. They were going to extract the 460 kilos of nuclear dust together. It was going to be a joint operation between Trump and Iran, and they were all going to go in there with the biggest, best American diggers and excavators and dig it out, and then it was going to be taken back home to America.
And everyone was going to get on a ship,
hands across.
And the Iranians were going to be applauding as the ship with the gold dust sealed off from
and
the
sprinkling rose water over the American soldiers.
Yes, and saying, thank you for taking our gold dust.
It's off our hands. Oh, it's a burden off our hands.
Yeah. It's been a real weight on us all these years. So, the point being that it's not obviously something that's easily accessible. So, the idea that the Americans would launch this kind of like gung ho effort to go in under cover of darkness and extract something that the Iranians probably have very well hidden also doesn't make sense. So, and after that, what you're left with is that it was just a kind of reconnaissance mission or an attempt to
probe.
Yeah, just to get in there and see if they can get behind enemy lines or something like that, or not behind enemy lines, but just get into Iran and maybe get access to one of those missile, underground missile silos or whatever, and, you know.
Or
figure out what's going on.
Well, not or, this is part of that, maybe. They've sacrificed and found out what they wanted to find out. They've lost in the process, but they managed to spin it for the public as blah, 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 a rescue mission, as a win. Hmm. But it was valuable to test what Iran has, how they respond, where they come from, something like that.
Yeah, exactly. So this is actually in terms of what the... This doesn't explain what the reason was, but this is the Iranians' reconstruction of what actually happened. This is, again, it's released quite not long after it happened, but you can recap it here if you want. It's a few minutes.
Extensive evidence that has come to light about the recent operation by the American Zionist enemy in Isfahan has exposed a crushing strategic defeat for the United States. U.S. President Donald Trump's frantic threats in the past few days to target Iran's civilian infrastructure, including power plants and bridges, are a direct consequence of the heavy defeat suffered by the U.S. forces in the Isfahan operation. The failed raid was carried out after the enemy conducted extensive aerial reconnaissance operations in the days leading up to the attack, according to the exclusive information. During those initial infiltration and reconnaissance missions, the U.S. and possibly the Zionist regime lost a significant number of aircraft, including at least one A-10 Thunderbolt II and two Black Hawk helicopters. The information obtained by Press TV reveals that zero hour for the failed Isfahan operation was set during a secret meeting at the White House under the direct supervision of the U.S. president himself. It has now become clear that this operation had no connection to the claimed rescue of a downed F-15 fighter pilot, a narrative initially pushed by American officials. Instead, evidence examined and confirmed by Press TV indicates that the real objective was to infiltrate and attack one of Iran's nuclear facilities in Isfahan. The landing site for C-130 transport aircraft, chosen based on previous reconnaissance, was an abandoned airstrip located dangerously close to one of these nuclear sites. The Americans miscalculated, believing that Iran's air defense would be unable to confront the aircraft involved in the operation. However, Press TV learned that the deployment of numerous U.S. aircraft occurred while the Iranian armed forces were in full alert waiting for them. In fact, American special forces fell directly into a trap set by Iranian forces. The Iranian armed forces, including the army, law enforcement, Faraja, the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, IRGC, and local popular forces, initially did not show a serious reaction to the landing of the first C-130, which was carrying dozens of special forces commandos. Evidence shows this aircraft veered somewhat off the runway while landing at the abandoned dirt airstrip. Minutes later, a second C-130 aircraft approached, carrying specialized vehicles, several MH-6 Little Bird helicopters, and other support equipment. At that moment, Iranian forces on the scene targeted the second aircraft before it could land, turning its normal landing into an emergency one. Two Black Hawk helicopters also arrived shortly after. It was at this moment that the aircraft, helicopters, and commandos who had disembarked from the first plane became perfect targets for the Iranian armed forces. After the special forces realized they had fallen into the trap, the White House Situation Room made a critical decision. The main operation to infiltrate the nuclear site was changed into a desperate rescue operation for the dozens of U.S. commandos trapped under Iranian fire. The Americans immediately sent several smaller aircraft to extract their forces, barely managing to gather the individuals and withdraw them from the deadly situation. The rescue operation was conducted so hastily that some soldiers and officers abandoned their equipment, including, according to the evidence possessed by Press TV, the identification document of an American officer left behind in the area to save their lives. After the commandos were evacuated, American fighter jets established a line of fire with a 5-kilometer radius to prevent Iranian forces from approaching the abandoned C-130s at the airstrip. The jets also carried out heavy bombing of their own equipment to prevent it from falling into Iranian hands. In this failed operation, U.S. Special Forces did not even have the chance to fly the special Little Bird helicopters. Some were destroyed on the ground, while others were destroyed inside the second C-130 aircraft. Following this disgraceful and heavy defeat, Trump hastily and chaotically held multiple press conferences to cover up the failure and falsely portray it as a pilot rescue operation. The information obtained by Press TV notes that the heavy aftershocks of this great debacle for Trump will affect not only the fate of the ongoing war against the Islamic Republic of Iran, but also the political future of America's gambling and ignorant president, his Republican Party, and the American political scene for years to come.
Yeah. That's closer to the truth, but again, I doubt, I question whether or not it was an attempt to extract the nuclear dust. It was maybe just, yeah, reconnaissance of some description. It was just a foray to see, testing, to see what would happen, and it didn't go well. So,
yeah. The Iranians are not parading the remains of any soldiers or anything.
No, like they probably would have. They were able to evacuate. There could have been casualties, but they were evacuated, you know.
Okay.
So it was a rescue mission in that sense, but it was a rescue mission for...
On the day of, on, following a FUBAR.
Yeah.
It was a rescue mission for the rescue mission.
Yeah. So they weren't lying technically. No, they were.
They were. They were. They were. They absolutely were.
Yeah. That, and that, in a sense, that incident kind of ended. That brought things to a... It was right after that that
that was ceasefire then, it was, happened. It was... Trump, it was talks, and it was
Islamabad,
and it was a blockade of your blockade.
Yeah.
Quick switch to screw this. It was a threat. There was a threat to
Iran.
Civilization, destroy their civilization. And then that was backed off on in favor of 2 weeks of negotiations. And then it's like, at this point, nobody can remember Trump, what the hell you've been saying, you know, 2 weeks, 48 hours, a week and a half, 3 days, ceasefire, whatever, we don't care anymore, let's just watch what happens. And what has happened is that he obviously backed off any military, more military maneuvers and allowed some kind of diplomacy. Well, quote unquote diplomacy, not really, because you know what the Americans want, they're not going to get from the Iranians. Their demands are too maximalist. So the Iranians have their own demands. So Trump decided to just let's see if we can put pressure on them economically with this blockade of their blockade. And like I said, there's been a time, it's been, you know, what, 10 days or so since that's been going on. So, but that'll run out at some point. And then in terms of, you know, it'll get to the point where they'll realize that that's not effective, or it's not doing what they want. It's not giving them what they want, which is Iran to completely surrender and beg for something, as they've done repeatedly, according to Trump. And in that situation, then I think the only option is to start bombing again.
Yeah. The who blinks first at this point is who's feeling the economic pain the most. And it's almost certainly going to be the American side.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird because the Iranians face, you know, serious destruction, let's say, if the US and Israel were to go full bore. But Trump faces something maybe worse, which is the complete destruction of his reputation. You know, and that for him, that's a fate worse than death in a sense. You know, so it's weird. You know, you have this asymmetry between the two, but the one that sounds
like they have most to lose,
like you have most to lose, are actually the ones that's Iran. They actually are in a stronger position in reality.
Yeah,
because they can escalate to the point. It's their backyard. So at the end of the day, that's the problem. Yeah. The problem is that our backyard, it's their backyard, it's their country, it's their region. Basically, it's right in their
And the more they strike, the more social cohesion increases. They were hoping for disintegration.
Yeah, well, that's definitely not going to happen now. That's
so even
that's a pipe dream.
During
But it's the destruction of the global economy that they can threaten.
But yeah, they haven't stopped not protesting, but coming out in support. So the Iranians are still going out in the streets at night, every night, even during this like ceasefire, in support of the Iranian government. Mm-hmm. It's not let up. I mean, maybe it's not as big as it was
a month ago,
but there's still large crowds of people out at night at like 3 a.m. saying, you know, death to America, never surrender.
Go harder.
Yeah.
Get her done. We should mention that in the tit for tat, the Iranians kind of said, we can play that game too, because this week they boarded a Greek container ship.
Mm-hmm.
Did they commandeer it? I don't know what the upshot was, but they published footage of one of their midget speedboats coming up, guys unloading and taking over the ship. So yeah, we destroyed their navy. We won. But what's this, Trump? So another illusion that's already burst that bubble. You've heard claims about Iran's drought ending.
Mm-hmm.
Due to recent heavy rainfall. Interesting theory. According to the World Resources Institute, the country has indeed gone through 5 consecutive years of drought, wherein most of the country experiences strong to severe drought. And it is now raining lots over much of the country. So it's a popular conspiracy theory in Iran that the country has been artificially deprived of rainfall.
Mm-hmm.
It's older than 5 years. Ahmadinejad, while still president in 2012, was quoted as espousing this, but the translated statement being, the enemy, the American Zionist regime, no doubt, the enemy destroys the clouds that are headed towards our country, and this is a war Iran will win. Now, that was obviously reported by Reuters et al. At the time to hold them up as a nut job. For what it's worth, Iran's own meteorological organization puts no credence to it. This is just natural variation. But it's interesting that this is on people's minds, I think. Drought and crop failure is a possible confounding factor. along with this gap in fertilizers and oil and gas that we're going to have to somehow digest, all of us, this year, because it looks like we're in line for the strongest, quote unquote, strongest El Nino in the last 10 years. That may not be the only thing going on with the planet and the climate, but just in itself, what it tends to happen is it increases the risk of drought across Asia, therefore crop failures. In Europe, it tends to increase rainfall, therefore crop failures. So if we get that on top of the gap, yeah.
Yeah.
Another outlier that people are noticing. I say it's an outlier, but it's related topically, of course. These oil and gas sites blowing up around the world. You've seen the lists of things. I mean, sometimes, you know, there's a mechanical explanation. They already understand why. They expect it'll be offline for X weeks or whatever. So, you know, but there's a couple that make you go, bloody hell, that sounds a bit more like there's a dirty game afoot. Like the one in Austria, this happened, I think it happened last month, but this report is from a couple of weeks ago in April. Attack on Europe and Austria's energy lifeline. Suspicions of sabotage against the TAL pipeline grow stronger. A massive high-voltage pylon strategically placed in the rugged mountainous regions of the Carnic Alps is slowly buckling after unknown perpetrators cut through its foundations with professional cutting torches. What initially appeared to be a quirk of nature is now turning out to be a suspected targeted attack on the heart of Central Europe's oil supply. Dirty. Now, that because that's in Europe, that may be like with Ukrainian, Russian geopolitics in mind. So it's not, you know, like, let's continue wrecking the global oil supply because... So each, you know what I mean? Each incident could have its...
But they've been happening all around the world, is the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. In weird places. I mean, there's certain things like in Russia, whatever, you can blame the Iranians or the Ukrainians. But there's been like one in South America, I think. There's been a couple in the US.
Panama Canal.
Yeah. There's been several that are just like weird. You know, it's almost like...
The one in Australia.
Contagion. One in Australia as well. Contagion, you know, in a certain sense. You think like, well, there's, you know, gas, oil refineries have been blown up and gas refineries have been blown up in the Middle East. So... out of in sympathy or limbic resonance, all the gas refineries just blow themselves up as well. Like, well, really? At the same time? I mean, I know, or maybe it's just a confirmation bias in a sense where these kind of things happen all the time, but you don't notice them because, you know, there's no war in the Middle East with oil and gas being blown up, but because, or they don't get reported on very much.
Because scarcity is on people's minds.
Exactly, they do now because scarcity, it's hard to know, but the number of them in such a short period of time is just strange. And as for, I mean, this, it seems to leave no doubt. This is like on the official Department of State, US Department of State website, state.gov, whatever, Operation Epic Fury. It's an explainer on Operation Epic Fury and international law. And it's in the second paragraph. Epic Fury is only the latest round of an ongoing international armed conflict with Iran. As the United States has explained in multiple letters to the UN Security Council, including most recently on March 10th, the United States is engaged in this conflict at the request of and in the collective self-defense of its ally Israel.
Black and white.
The second part, as well, is as in the exercise of the United States' own inherent right of self-defense.
Yeah, well, that's weak.
Yeah, that's weak sauce right there. Self-defense, what do you defend yourself against? Iran? Iran getting a nuclear weapon and blowing up who? Israel? Well, it's still Israel then, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, self-defense, but there it is, black and white. Is engaged in this conflict at the request of, and in the collective self-defense of its Israeli ally. What is collective self-defense? Collective self-defense, that means both of them. So it's America is defending itself by defending Israel, because America is Israel and Israel is America. Is that how that works?
Or is it more like me, myself, and I, where me, myself, and I is Israel? Israel and itself. Allow Israel to defend itself by defending Israel and itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's not itself referring to America. It's itself referring to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Israel and itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's the mind meld of the two countries. It just gets stronger and stronger until they can't distinguish themselves anymore.
Yeah.
As a separate country.
These really are definitely... They're quite there.
It's all laid out in that 1996 document. A clean break.
Mm. A clean break with...
I can't remember the quote.
With Israel.
Yeah.
No. A clean break with not...
Netanyahu himself was a co-signer. And within months of its publication, he became prime minister for the first time. And he has a passage in there where it's like, we need to convince Americans or Westerners in general that Israel's interests are so important because it's for the collective self-defense of Western civilization.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that idea was like.
From the get-go.
From the get-go. And we need to get this out there so that such that... The two are synonymous for as many Westerners as possible. Americans, they've got a huge chunk of them, if not the majority, because they're passively just there. Europeans, it's harder mm-hmm. for them to. mm-hmm. They have to work harder at that.
Yeah.
Did I see a report earlier this week that Trump fired the Navy secretary?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Hegseth. He was undermining Hegseth's authority.
Again, doesn't look good. You're in the middle of a war and you fire... Well, they fired a bunch of other generals, didn't they? Ostensibly because... Well, for the same reason.
Mm-hmm. Because they thought that...
They thought the plan was bonkers.
Going into Iran for Israel was a bad idea. Well, the whole thing was a bad idea, yeah.
Yeah.
And it is a bad idea, obviously. So what more is there to say about it?
Yeah.
The question is, well, why is Trump doing something that's a really bad idea? Well, Trump obviously, like everybody thinks, is under some kind of duress.
Which is why he keeps saying over and over again.
That he's not.
I'm the least pressured president in the history of presidents. Yeah. No one has put any pressure on me to do anything ever.
Yeah.
Has he expressly said that?
Yeah.
Yeah. He says the opposite of what is true in a given moment. He'll say the opposite. He realizes that this looks like I'm A, B, or C, so I'm going to say I'm not A, B, or C.
Meanwhile, you've got Tucker Carlson begging him to just say what is obvious to everyone mm-hmm. else, but he can't and won't.
What?
Because to say it would be to admit that he's not the boss.
Yeah. For sure.
And that's, like you said before, fate worse than death or something.
Yeah.
It's like so...
yeah,
so
that's not...
Captured with the idea.
That's not what Trump do. That's not what a Trump do. They don't do that kind of thing. So he's hoisted on his own petard in a real way, you know what I mean? His own... The petard of his own personality, basically.
Which makes him an easy mark.
Yeah.
For the Israelis.
Yeah, for deep staters, Israelis... People who just want to control him. They've always wanted to control him. And their beef with him in his first term was that he was trying to not be controllable. He was trying to be his own person in a certain sense. And they're not happy with him. So they're giving to him in spades, basically. They're showing him who's boss. And he's trying to fight back, but quite impotently. So that's where we're at. And so we're really at the mercy. It's not totally his fault, but we really are at the mercy of Trump's narcissism in that sense, you know, where how is he going to react going forward to that kind of situation where he feels like he has no power, no control, he can't do what he wants, but he's still going to try and
establish
make it look like he can. He's going to try and wrest power away from those who really hold it. And what does he have to do that? And would that not simply be playing into their hands? Probably. So he really doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. As he once said himself about Israel and Iran.
Mm-hmm.
It's tragedy.
It's a farce, really. No, things so unnecessary and stupid, but maybe it's necessary for people to get a grip and wake up and stop talking shade on social media.
We have a Netanyahu update.
Yeah. He's alive and kicking.
Well, remember, officially nothing ever really happened to him. But now they admit something did happen.
Oh, yeah?
Not war-related. The report in Israeli press picked up by RT yesterday. Netanyahu revealed prostate cancer diagnosis. That's not the first time, because in 2024 he had some prostate surgery, apparently. Mm-hmm. But
good to get out of his court case.
Does that? The Israeli leader hid the medical report for 2 months amid the war with Iran. According to Netanyahu's annual medical report published Friday, he's got another tumor. But it's found in the early stage, no metastasis, and now the problem's been fully treated. Blah, 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 blah. The disease has disappeared. Netanyahu said he had asked for the information to be withheld from the public so it would not be released, quote, at the height of the war against Iran and fuel what he called, quote, more false propaganda against Israel. So, and RT explains in the writing that it's not actually known when exactly this happens, but it's pretty clear this happened in the since February 28th.
Mm-hmm.
So he was indeed on a hospital bed these last 2 months. This is interesting, especially if anyone remembers what they said happened to former U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, who went into hospital for emergency prostate surgery sometime after, quote-unquote, returning from a visit to Ukraine.
Right. That's the go-to explanation. Yeah. If you've been injured when you shouldn't have been by the enemy and you want to cover it up, then you've been in hospital.
Removing your third prostate.
Removing your third gallbladder. Yeah, that's quite possible that he was injured. And, or not injured, but that he was ill. And that's what gave rise to the apparent, what people thought were AI videos of him. They maybe toyed with that for a little bit in order to, again, Israel has the same problem as America does with reputation.
Optics.
And about losing and not being awesome and amazing and the strongest and the bestest. They want to avoid that at all costs. And they're willing to go to great lengths to cover it up, primarily just talking shit, basically telling lies, making shit up. So it's possible that Netanyahu had to be, he was in a bad way medically. And they didn't want him absent.
So they made they seem to be saying, yeah, we made AI videos just for a while, but not for the reasons you said.
Well, no, they didn't say that, but
no.
But that would be one explanation, at least for some of the videos that people suspected were AI, that they just decided that they needed to, didn't want to leave too long of a time without an appearance in public, but he needed to be out of public. He had to be in hospital, let's say, for a week. And during that week, they produced a few AI videos of him. But now he's back in action. That'll do as an explanation for me for now.
Until round two.
Yeah.
It's coming.
Maybe. And then...
And then Netanyahu's, like, bionic skin... falls
off,
and then the demon underneath is revealed. Yeah. Or a robot.
Demon robot.
Or a demon robot.
There you go. May as well go the whole hog. There was this event during the week as well, Israelis, in terms of talking about optics, a picture of a Israeli soldier smashing the face of a Jesus statue, and obviously took it down, and obviously staged. I don't know if he's actually, but it was done on purpose. And as I commented there, is during their Israeli soldier in southern Lebanon. And as I said there, it's given that that saying that the Jews killed Jesus is officially anti-Semitic, the actions of the soldiers clear incitement to anti-Semitism. We should be charged with that by the Israeli government or something.
That would be fitting.
Because that's what happened, basically, you know what I mean? A lot of people were like, oh, and the Israeli government had to respond to it and say, this is terrible, he's going to be held to account for it, and blah, blah. And they put up a new statue, which they actually
didn't.
Turned out they stole from a church. It wasn't even a big statue, it was a little small thing. They just rested against the bottom of the post there. And then some Italian UNIFIL soldiers actually went and replaced it with a proper-sized one. But obviously this plays into, that image plays into anti-Semitic tropes, right, of how the Jews
hate Jesus,
hate Christians, and just see them as stupid guys and stuff like that. And here's an Israeli soldier.
It's not just...
It's anti-Semitic for that to be seen, right, or for you to say that. And it's anti-Semitic to...
To notice.
To put this picture out there and to portray that or to further that messaging.
But it's...
Except it's reality as well. So you always come back to the conclusion that a lot of times when they say something's anti-Semitic, it's actually the truth that's anti-Semitic. Stop saying that. Why? Because it's true. Not because it's false, because it's true. Stop saying it because it's true.
Because
it can be true. It's kind of like there was misinformation during COVID. There was misinformation, disinformation, and malinformation. Malinformation was information that wasn't actually incorrect. In fact, it was true, but that it could have negative implications. So you put it into the bad category. It's bad information, but it's actually true. So this picture of this soldier smashing the face of Jesus is malinformation. It's true that he did it. It's also true that there is a significant sentiment within Israeli society and in the military in particular of dislike of Christians and Christian iconography, but it's malinformation to reveal that to the world, because
it's not
everybody will end up in a concentration camp. All the Jews will end up in a concentration camp again if you continue to spread that. So what they want to do is to be able to trash Christianity and Christian iconography and Jesus statues in private. Just let us do it in private. And if someone gets out, just don't say anything.
There you go. That's really what it is. They want to be able to do it and have people just accept it.
Yeah, because if they can do it in private, they might get some kicks out of that, but really they'd like to show it in other people's faces. Because what's the point in having an ideology like that if you don't actually pander to the masses, right? So ultimately, yes, you have to
What's the point of
see it
of being told that you are the greatest, that you are God's chosen people, that you're special in every way? Like, how real is that if you don't actually get to
shove it in
destroy
people's faces?
People's beliefs and shove it in their face, basically.
Yeah,
which is the same thing when like you said, it's not just the fact that this guy did this to the cross, desecrated the iconography. It's also the way that they went about, like, quote unquote, apologizing and like, we're going to make it right.
Mm-hmm.
Like their attempt at restitution was as anti-Semitic as the actual destruction of the cross itself, in my book, because you didn't do a damn thing. You actually just, like, okay, you destroyed a cross, and your solution was to steal a different cross from someone else, but not even, like, put it up. It's just, like, put it against a tree and walk away and pretend like you did some great thing.
Mm-hmm.
It just blows my mind.
Yeah.
And there was also...
be a good Judeo-Christian and say you're sorry for what you just said.
There was this one. Did we show this last
Shabbat
week?
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom. Throw down the keys. It's Friday.
Shabbat shalom alam ding dong. Did we show this one last week?
Yes, we did.
Okay, so that was another one. Yeah. That was noticing is wrong.
I think what pissed him off was the Italian newspaper put it on the cover.
Yeah.
Drawing attention to it.
There's also, just as a follow-up to that one, I can't take credit for it. I wish I did. Can you open that, Scotty? Oh, I can just get the X. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wedding of the year.
I captioned it 7 psychopaths.
Yeah. Bench beard like eyebrows. Yeah. Lauren Rumor or something else. I vote her for Demon.
Yeah.
Demon 100%. Of the year.
I don't really be. I'm not really up to. Does she actually look like that now?
Yes.
She's had the whole surgery.
Oh, no, that's what she is.
I mean, like, it might be off by like a little bit, but not by a whole lot.
Crazy.
Have you seen the, I doubt you've seen the actual the horror films with Saw and the little clown thing, Jigsaw, with like this, the pattern on his cheeks?
No, rings a bell, but no.
Oh,
Saw. I remember Saw 1, Saw 2, 3. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And the little never like, watched clown the thing. The little toy clown with the... Let me see if I can get a picture of it. Because it's exactly what she looks like.
He looks like some kind of hyena crossover. Seriously. But Randy Fine's just fat. Netanyahu, there's something about his skin that's always been... You know, it looks green in a certain light. It's bizarre. Shapiro, well, he's short. I'm short. I can relate to being short. But those eyebrows, man. And the other fella, I don't even know. I'm not going there. Why does she get thrown in? Oh, because she's old. She's.
But she's not even Jewish, apparently. She claims
Laura Loomer's not.
No, she just adopted. She claimed that she was Jewish, but she's actually not.
I think her parents was British.
Her father has some kind of Jewish links or whatever. Jewish tie, some kind of Jewishness to the father, but it's matrilineal to be Jewish. So it's very tenuous. It's like someone just with a Jewish relative or something saying, I'm Jewish and I love Israel. So that's what she's done, yeah.
She's a convert.
All right, I just found one. It's a legit picture of her. We'll see. If Scotty can pull it up. And it's a legit picture of her and the scary clown from a horror movie. Can you tell which is which?
Yes. No.
Because I'm not sure. Grok, which one is the demon?
Hey, Grok, which one's the demon? Yeah. She got trolled a lot, like, because of her appearance and stuff. I mean, she kind of deserves it because she's such an evil person, but
it's true.
Has no morals. But people started calling her Larry. Claiming that she was actually, she had transitioned. She was a guy who transitioned to be a woman. And so whenever she'd say something, be like, shut up, Larry. What's that, Larry? What are you saying now? Yeah. Social media is bad. Anyway. So supposedly the shooter's manifesto said he wanted to target administration officials. This is according to Fox News. Us investigators also found extensive anti-Trump and anti-Christian rhetoric across his social media accounts. U.S. Secret Service later interviewed his sister and blah, blah. She said her brother often made radical statements and spoke about doing something to fix today's world. She confirmed he bought 2 handguns and a shotgun from Cap Tactical Firearms and stored them at their parents' home, without their knowledge. He regularly trained with those firearms at shooting ranges. He was reportedly linked to a group called the Wide Awakens. And he also attended a No Kings protest in California.
Aha!
So there you go. So straight up.
Slam dunk.
Lefty, just, I'm going to have a go.
The only thing I don't get there is he was at the wrong place if he was anti-Christian.
Well, he's anti-Trump, so he's anti-Christian.
Oh, Trump is...
Trump is not just Christian, he's Christ, haven't you heard?
He's Jesus. Oh. Yeah. He's Dr. Jesus now.
Dr. Jesus says, Bomberan. So, that's what's going on. Not much else happening around the world.
Well, there was Molly.
Who's Molly?
What's Molly? What's a Molly?
What's a Molly?
Well,
Molly.
Yeah.
Molly. Sure. Molly, yeah, well, that's the US / maybe some French, he's whatever, G'ing up the Al-Qaeda jihadis to try and kick the Russians out, and or to kick the overthrow the Malian government that has turned sour on France and Western interests and is looking more favorably towards the Russians, has been for quite a while. And it's their pushback. That's what they do, right? When a country goes bad, they get flooded with jihadis who want to overthrow the government. They get flooded with Western-backed
ever so conveniently jihadis. For America.
Yeah.
And the West.
You know, it's par for the course these days. It's how you read it. You don't need to delve into the details. You just read that.
Read that. The headline and go, I know who did that.
It's like, they're doing that same thing they've been doing for like, 70 years, maybe 80 years. Depends how long you go back.
But the Russians have
finally liberated.
Put the kibosh.
What?
On the uprising.
Yeah. Well, they're in the process of, yeah.
Where?
In Mali.
Oh. You're calling it an uprising. Okay, no. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like, in quotes.
It's just like there's a Badlands, basically, towards the desert of all those countries. And periodically, they make incursions down. Could be Burkina Faso, could be Mali, could be Niger. Niger is very valuable to France because it's where it got about 80% of its uranium until recently. France is now having to pay premium on the global market, mostly from Kazakhstan, where Russia has leverage. And it doesn't like that. It's used to getting it from the Badlands of West Africa.
Yeah. And Russia, Ukraine, that's just grinding on. It's kind of crazy to think that war's been going on, and like not every day, but regularly you see all these missiles hitting Ukraine and stuff, and it's nothing. But what about Iran? You know? And there's not even as much happening in Iran, you know, but it's just like there's this Ukraine thing has been put on the back burner. But the Ukrainians have been over the past couple of weeks hitting targeting Russia's oil infrastructure. To try and apparently, in response to Bessent and Trump talking about lifting sanctions on Iranian oil, at least Iranian oil, or sorry, Russian oil at sea. So the Ukrainians,
but there's also
we're gonna target your refineries again. You know,
the new Hungarian prime minister. Yeah, he has withdrawn Hungary's. Was it a veto or was it just? It was a veto on the $90 billion
which passed,
deal. So now that passed. So everybody who was like, maybe this has, you know, maybe Orban getting the boot has to do with this $90 billion deal. And then the day of the election or the day after when he came out and he was like, and he said that he didn't see any reason to change Hungary's policy. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. We'll see if that plays out.
Yep.
And now it's like, no, it's going through. That was the whole point of this.
Yeah. And he also, said that, I mean, whatever stock you put in this, but could just be words, but he said that, because Orban was a big Israel lover, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And was bestest friends with Netanyahu and stuff. But this guy has said that they would uphold international law, or at least international criminal court or court of justice rulings. And so he said that if Netanyahu or any of the others that have been, that are wanted by the ICC, that if they were on Hungarian territory, they would be arrested. I mean, that could be a bold and brave talk that he may not be able to actually...
Definitely not.
Back up when it happens, you know. But it's always interesting to get a read on, not necessarily get an accurate read, but get a read, some kind of a read on what's going on in terms of policies, you know, American policy. If you want to know what American policy is towards like Russia, or China, Iran, whatever, don't listen to Trump, listen to politicians. And not even necessarily very knowledgeable ones, or not well-known ones, you know, but just ones that have their ear to the ground within Congress and they'll tell you, you know. I mean, their bias is obviously showing as well, but sometimes they can, this guy, Jimenez, I don't know where he's from, US rep, he's obviously Republican, so have a listen.
I'm wondering if this Iran conflict and what Iran tried to do in the Strait of Hormuz as actually giving China new ideas in terms of the Strait of Taiwan.
Yeah, but you know, but Maria, really what is, this has demonstrated is that we can choke off China's oil at just any time that we want.
Yes.
We now have Venezuela's yes. oil that's under our control, and that Iranian oil, we can stop that flow anytime we want. And yes. that accounts for a huge percentage of huge. China's oil imports. And so China has two weaknesses. One is energy. The second one is food. Both of them are vulnerable to our blockades, et cetera. And so now China is looking at this and saying, well, you know, we have cards to play. If they do that in the South China Sea, we have other cards to play that will hurt them also.
Hmm. So we kind of exposed the fact that, you know, thinking that, you know, obviously we've talked about it here as well, but the idea was get Venezuela's oil,
uh-huh.
then get Iran's oil.
Yeah.
Or curtail it or stop it or whatever, throttle it or steal it ideally. Take it all for yourself, according to Trump. But those two countries' oils as a way to put pressure on China.
Yeah, and then have Trump go to Beijing to settle the ultimate
yeah,
trade.
With all the cards in his hand.
Yeah.
Like all 52 plus the Joker and the actual box that they come in.
Yeah.
And an extra pack in his back pocket just to be sure. So you've got like two decks of cards.
Not only do you have all the cards, you have all the cards.
Yeah. Haven't even opened them.
I
haven't seen many. I haven't even opened the box.
Turn up.
So you can be absolutely sure that I have all the cards.
I can, yeah, exactly. You can be absolutely sure I have all the cards because this pack is not even open.
It's still got the plastic wrap on it.
And then G says to him, are you done? Okay, now turn the box around. See that? Made in China. Mm. Now come over here. Opens a warehouse door. See all those? There's millions of boxes.
It's that plastic wrap made in China. Now, yeah, it's just interesting to hear. I mean, that's just, he's just repeating the party line or whatever. But yeah. You don't hear like anybody in the Trump administration necessarily mm-hmm. saying that explicitly, and they should be saying it over and over again so people understand. Like this guy is just that's what we're doing here. That's the point of this.
Yeah,
and he's on Fox News saying it. But they should all be saying it. The whole administration should be reminding the American public over and over again why we're doing this
to keep America great.
Well, no, but in the specifics, you know.
By Yeah.
We got our Venezuela's oil and we're after Iran's oil in order to throttle China so that we can keep America great. Like you have to explain it all, you know, yeah. why that would be, why one would lead to the other, you know, why we have to do that to China. Because if we don't, then China will, you know, potentially put us in a position where they can throttle our food supply or our essential goods that we need basically for our military and all that kind of stuff. They can put us in a bad position. So we're going to do it to them first, or we're trying to get strategic leverage over them so they can't do that to us, because we suspect that they're going to do that to us, because as any hegemon knows, you always are afraid of anybody who might look like they could unseat you, even if they have no intention of doing that at all. You suspect that they will because you're paranoid. Because
if you're sitting there, if you were in their shoes,
that's what you would do. So it's a projection of your own mentality onto others, you know. Mm. As you're sitting on your pile of ill-gotten gains, you become a bit paranoid that the people that you stole it from might want some of it back, i.e. they're out to get me.
Yeah.
Or might want to, yeah, get a bigger share of the pie or something like that. So it's all, you know. It's all the usual.
Instead, what they're faced with is a split MAGA base because
you made your promises.
Half of the dissenters see it as no, this is a war for Israel. Because they haven't, they maybe tried harder to explain, no, it's bigger than that. Mm. It goes beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
They might have more support. Instead, they just see Israel everywhere and they're like,
right.
No, it's not what we voted for.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, it's the Chinese and the Russians on social media with their bot accounts spreading that message in order to undermine MAGA, in order to take
and
America
Qatar
down.
Through Tucker Carlson.
Tucker Carlson. So yeah, it's all a bit stupid if you look at it from that broader perspective, you know. But then you realize, well, what else are these people going to do? Like, they're not going to go and get proper jobs, like, you know. They're just going to sit around, you know, making policy, writing policy papers, and then presenting them to the government. The government, let's do that. Yeah. What are we doing today? We're going
today we're choking this country.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Okay. Today we're going to do what that bunch of crypto Jewish nerds in the Brookings Institute came up with last night.
Do it. Okay.
Make America great again.
Do it. Send it out to all the influencers.
It's not just for Israel. Get,
we've got baby eating to do.
Get Posobiec in here. I want him to write 10 tweets today.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what's going on. It's all a bit silly and stupid, but nonetheless dangerous because, well, you can see how some, like, silly and stupid is one thing, but when you have silly and stupid going on amongst people who have a lot of power and control, then that silly and stupid becomes dangerously silly and stupid. So it's both at the same time, you know. Stuff you would ordinarily just dismiss as, look, yes, like Trump. Imagine Trump was just like some guy that lived down the street from you who periodically came into your house and started saying things like Trump says. You might entertain him for a while, but eventually just like wouldn't be opening the door to him, or you'd be,
you know, the mad golfer down the road.
Yeah, you'd set the dogs out on him or something like that. You know what I mean? You wouldn't think too much about it, but unfortunately that kind of guy has, and it's, again, we can't only blame Trump because, yeah, there's a bunch of crazy people around him, and the crazy Israelis are laughing it up by playing that leverage.
Playing them like a fiddle.
Playing Trump like a fiddle and having great fun while doing it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so yeah, we'll have to wait and see. It's been kind of slow week. We're waiting on the global boiling to start this summer and for droughts to happen.
It started here already.
For droughts and water shortages to happen at the same time as diesel and gas shortages and then food shortages, and, you know, we're just waiting for all that stuff to kick off, like, because they're going to miss a good opportunity for it to happen if they don't do it, you know. I mean, if you've got that on your bingo card, like, you know, it's ripe for it. Don't let this opportunity go, you know. But I'd be quite happy if they didn't just give it all up and, like I said, go and get a proper job. Not much chance of that, though. So, yeah. Anyway, we will leave it there for this week, folks. We hope you enjoyed the show. And we'll be back next week with another show on whatever crazy nonsense has been going on between now and then. So until then, have a good one. See you later.
See ya.
Can't stop the signal now.